Hello and welcome to the Greenery podcast and to the March edition of our brand new series, Nature's Calendar. My name is Emily Dodd. I'm joined by wildlife experts Gus Egan and Laura Weston. I started by asking Angus why he'd brought us to a cemetery on a Saturday morning.
Well, as we are speaking just now, two beautiful swans flying over our head. Well, there you go. That's why we brought you to a cemetery on a Saturday morning. They have just become very, very good havens for wildlife. So the reason that we brought you here today is hopefully we're going to come along here and we're going to be able to see and hear, certainly, lots and lots of different wildlife. And just whilst we were waiting for you, because we've seen
long-tailed tits,
tree creepers. We've seen signs of badgers snuffling and all of this kind of stuff. So it's a really, really nice place to kind of come to. And it's a very, very quiet place. You know, you're not going to get lots and lots of people coming here. So the wildlife tends to kind of be out and about, you know, and not scarce anyway. So a great place to come to.
If that wasn't enough to tempt you to come to Warriston, listen to what else is on offer in March.
It's a great month because it's really, really the month when everything's starting to kind of come out and about. You know, everything's woken up from the cold winter. Hopefully the last of the snows and the freezing temperatures will have gone. So you can expect to see lots of stuff. So from your badgers out and about, they would have had their young in February. They'll be out and about just now, marking territories to make sure that nobody comes and disturbs the young. They'll be cleaning out the bedding, getting giving ready, through to your birds, hooking up,
nesting
starting to get their nesting stuff, lots and lots of territorial songs kind of going on, your insects, even your caterpillars and stuff coming out of hibernation, your queen bees, you know, we've already seen these. Last week we saw them for the first time. Yesterday we came across one that was actually still waking up, you know. So it's just a really, really kind of fun time to start seeing everything kind of coming out of their winter sort of slumber, I guess. Whether they're actually hibernating or whether they're just in a kind of chilled out, I'm not going out kind of state, you know.
A bit like us.
Don't forget about frogs. Lots and lots of frogs about. Obviously they're doing the business just now. We've already, I think we saw frog spawn last week at the end of February, which is kind of quite early. Certainly in lots and lots of other ponds we've not yet seen.
Not
an awful lot, but it's a great, great time for your amphibians, newts as well. All of them are out and about doing their stuff as well. It's just a really, really fun time. I think particularly after what's been a very, very sort of long and cold and wintry winter. You know, the spring seems it seems all the more vibrant. You can almost smell spring, I think, in March, which is a kind of weird concept.
Especially the wild garlic.
Especially the wild garlic, which we're maybe going to be able to have a wee taste of as we walk round.
Brilliant.
Nice one.
I've not got my mints.
Okay. So, shall we just have a wee wander around? Is that okay?
Yeah, brilliant.
Nice one.
Throughout our walk, we'd be interrupted by new sights, new sounds.
Look. That's where we saw it earlier on today as well. One of my favourite birds. Fantastic birds. Lovely, lovely little clawed feet. Beautiful little hooked beak. Hooked bill. Really, really cute. And they literally do. They creep up the trees and they're looking in the bark, in the crevices in the bark for any kinds of little bugs and stuff. Yeah. Fantastic birds. I love them.
Wherever we went, Gus would point out signs of nature.
The vaults. And you can see that there's trees actually growing out of them there as well. Family members would have been taken in there. You can see they've all been sealed up. I mean, that looks quite recent. That looks like it's breeze block or something that's kind of sealed them up. But at one point, they probably would have just been bars and we'd been able to go in there. And that's where the coffins and stuff would have been. But it's just brilliant to see. It's just kind of nature's taken. I mean, I think that's the thing with this. When you get an old graveyard like this, and I don't know how old it is, but I'm assuming just from looking at, here we go, when's this, 1853, you know, it's probably a couple of hundred years old, but has been left for however long. You know, I think it's probably been 50, 60 years since anyone's been down here. It's a really, really good example of nature taking over. but not necessarily in a bad way. Do you know what I mean? I don't think it's not like the graves are being desecrated or anything like that. I think it's actually really, really quite a kind of poignant thing, you know, and I think it's lovely to see even just the ivy and the brambles growing over here. And you can imagine this place at night time, just with the wildlife kind of about the place. I think it's actually a really, really kind of quite a nice thing. You know, I would be, if I had relatives buried here, I think I would probably even prefer it to when they're buried in very manicured neat. And neat and tidy and all of this kind of stuff. There's something about it, there's something quite...
I think everything's just going back to nature.
Yeah, back to nature, you know.
Ever present in every graveyard is the yew tree. But I was quite surprised to see Laura grab the branch and give it a big shake.
Yeah, the pollen's coming off it there, you can see that.
If you get the right time of year, it's just clouds.
Clouds of pollen. Wow. It's really, really, really cool.
And they can live...
The oldest tree in Europe is a yew tree, and we're really, really blessed. It's in Scotland. It's in Fortingall, which is in the banks of Loch Tay, in an old churchyard there. And nobody knows for sure how old it is, but it's reckoned to be. Some people say it's 5,000 years old. Some people say it's 3,000 years old. But Pontius Pilate is rumoured to have played under it as a child. I don't believe that, though, because I don't think that the Romans were here when that was kind of going on. But it's all kind of folklore. But it's, if you ever get the chance, go and visit it, because it is the most awesome, awesome tree. And yew trees, as they grow older, they don't grow tall. They kind of grow outwards, and then they rot from the inside. So you can actually kind of climb into the inside of them. And there are some yew trees down south in England that they've got sort of tables and chairs and a door that you can walk into the centre of these trees. Fantastic. Wow.
Wherever we went, Gus would point out signs of nature. Badger trails, nibbled pine cones, the noises and the smells.
Just hear the sound there of the great kitnail. I think it's one of the easiest birds for... certain for children to kind of recognise, because it's the teacher, 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 and it's just it's a very distinctive sound.
One of my favourite discoveries was hidden beneath a cherry tree.
Yeah, little mouse hole in there. There you go. Well, hey, look at these. Mouse. Fantastic. Ah, brilliant. Cherry seeds, chewed by mice. Yeah. There you go, everywhere you look. This is fantastic. This is one of our favourite things to find. The winter hoard. So a bird will probably have eaten the cherry, or there's a good chance a bird might have eaten the cherry, pooped out the stone, and then the mouse has come along and eaten the thing. I mean, it may not be the case. The mouse may very well have eaten the cherry as well. But there's every kind of... It's a nice story of a kind of... A nice food chain going. But you often find...
Right here as well.
Yeah, I mean, look at that. So there you go. So we without seeing anything, we're not seeing a mouse here. I mean, there were signs around the corner there, and it's like maybe in here as well. But just the fact that we're seeing these is telling us that mice have been here sitting and nibbling them, you know?
And if we had... You would see them.
And if we had a really, really kind of good wee magnifying glass with us, and you were to look, you would see the tiny little teeth mark around there as well, which would tell you exactly wood mouse, different ones for field voles, different ones for all of these kind of things. But the fact that it would have been holding in its little hands like that, brilliant.
And this tree is, what's going on here? Is this like amber?
Ah, here you go. This is just the resin from it. This is a cherry tree. I mean, that's quite actually interesting to see such a chunk of it. I don't know.
And then it would over a long time, it would turn.
Yeah,
to amber.
It would eventually over. Oh, that's a lovely bit there. Actually, that's
a great bit. So the tree kind of looks like it's got a cold.
Yeah,
or something.
Exactly. It's a runny nose.
Runny.
A solid snot.
Solid snot coming out of the side of it.
But really nice.
Gus seemed to be able to discover signs of nature everywhere he went. I asked what his secret was.
It's kind of like looking for the signs, I guess, of where, you know, the normal landscape looks slightly different, you know, and whether it's paths or whether it's just ground that's been trampled down.
Sadly, we stumbled upon a very unwelcome visitor to Warriston Cemetery.
We've got this Japanese knotweed. And Japanese knotweed is sort of one of the top invasive plants in Britain. It's an introduced species. Funnily enough, introduced, I think, probably around the time of the Victorians, when it was the kind of the British Empire and they were bringing kind of things back. And it's an extremely invasive plant. And a massive, massive conservation problem. There's kind of two top ones just now in Britain. Japanese knotweed and Himalayan or Indian balsam are the kind of two key ones. And with this, it has no kind of natural predators, no insects particularly like it. Its roots are incredibly deep. And basically what happens is the only way to kind of get rid of it, I think, is you either can inject it with something, or if you dig it up, you have to dig down sort of, it's the same below as it is above.
Oh no.
And if you leave any little bit of a root system below, it still continues to grow. And it spreads at quite a remarkable rate of meterage per year. I've not seen this here, but it's a very, very small clump. But it takes over, and you can see, I mean, this is last year's stuff, and it's broken over, but you could see if that was kind of standing tall, it's going to be, you know, 3 meters tall, and it does, it just kind of takes over, and it'll, you know, things like your brambles, and even things like your nettles and stuff that are kind of growing underneath it just now, will be sort of brushed aside as it spreads. And we've seen in some woodlands in the city, it moving at, you know, 3 meters a year, kind of spreading out unchecked, you know. But it's certainly not a good one to see anywhere. I don't even actually think it's the most attractive of plants anyway. Yeah, there's the other one, the Himalayan balsam, is actually a very, very nice looking plant. It looks a bit like an orchid. And it's, you know, it's, you see them and the pew, and yeah. You know, we teach the tree, you know, it's a fantastic example of showing seed dispersal, because they do ping off, you know. But you know, we're trying to stop children from, oh god, because we're saying to them in one breath, you're saying, don't, you know, this is a nasty plant. And then in the other one, you're saying, well, hold on, check what happens when you touch these seeds and they ping all over the place. So you've got to kind of let them do it once. and that's it. But at least it looks like it's a nice looking plant. Yeah. And you see the bees and the hoverflies and anything that's kind of going into this, they turn white because they get covered in the pollen. And they look like ghost bees. Yeah, fantastic. It's very, very cool. But not very cool at the same time.
As we wandered around the cemetery, we talked about what happens when life is left to its own devices and when people take a step back.
It's a kind of wonderful thing. It does give you hope. I think that's the thing. You know, a lot of negative things going on, you know, and human beings responsible for a lot of these kind of things. Yet Mother Nature always kind of wins in the end. And I think that's a kind of, you know, you can kind of sleep well at night kind of knowing that, you know.
Yeah, life finds a way.
Yeah, it does. And it's kind of, it's a strange way to kind of look at things, but I like it. I like the idea of, you know, right, well, human beings can go and they can pollute and they can do this and they can do that and all of this, but it doesn't matter, you know, because at the end, the planet will kind of will win back, you know. And I do think coming to places like this is where you see, you take a photo back there of those lovely gravestones, the cross ones, and there's just them, they're not, you know, just disappearing. They're still there, you know, but nature just kind of coming over them.
It reminds me a bit of, you know, when people discovered the Inca Trail, and it was under all this undergrowth. This cemetery is a bit like that.
That's what's happening, you know.
Yeah.
And it's lovely. I think it's maybe sad when, you know, when you, some of these gravestones have obviously been kind of pushed over by people, vandalizers, to, but a lot of them know it is. It's the movement of the roots of the trees and all of this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I think that's all right. Well, I'll put it this way, we would not be doing this here if this was a beautifully manicured graveyard. Mm-hmm. So kind of, you know, we've got nature to thank for kind of for that, you know.
I was starting to get the hang of this nature detective work and thought I'd made a discovery all by myself and had a go at identifying it.
So I've got a feather here.
Yep.
It's black and white, so would it be a magpie?
Would it be a magpie?
I don't know.
It'd be a pigeony feather.
It's a pigeon.
A pigeon magpie, which is one of these very, very rare types of magpies or pigeons that you find only in
the cemetery. Yeah. You have to come here to see it.
We finished our morning with the evidence of badgers, with some badger snuffle marks.
There's just quite a nice little bit to finish here that, down there we followed the badger trails. We didn't actually find a badger set, but up here you can just see everywhere you look here is you've just got these snuffle marks.
So there's loads of pine needles on the ground, occasional pine cone, and then these little holes.
And it's all it is, it's them snuffling, and they're looking for bugs, anything, roots, anything. I mean, badgers are omnivores. Foxes snuffle a little bit, not as much as this. People might think this is rabbits, but one thing that would demonstrate this as being a rabbit is you would always find rabbit droppings. Yeah. Wherever rabbits are digging anywhere or snuffling about or anything, you will always find rabbit droppings, because rabbits can't control when they go to the toilet. They just go to the toilet. So they're digging, they go to the toilet.
It.
Yeah, well, exactly. And there's no,
again.
As you can see from looking around here, there's no rabbit droppings. No rabbit droppings at all. In fact, quite surprising, actually, just even in the graveyard,
our
cemetery, no signs of rabbits at all. Mm. Might be a high fox population. I don't know.
Thank you for listening to the Nature's Calendar podcast. Please do get in touch to tell us what you've seen in March. Send us your photos. If you made any wee films or if you've got any audio, we would love to hear it. Please just post it onto the blog, or you can use the contact form to get in touch. Let us know if you have any questions or suggestions, or you want something to be on the next podcast. Please do get in touch. For more information, log on to www.greenaleaf.org/naturescalendar. We'll be back in April.